You're listening to SpursCast, episode 578. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the SpursCast. Joining me today will be Project Spurs writer Colin Reed. Colin, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing good. We're slowly, looks like basketball is going to come back in some sort of modified version for select teams. So that's kind of we have a pretty long episode today, SpursCast listeners. I know it's been a while since I've last recorded, a few weeks now. And the reason why is because we're just waiting to see, you know, every day almost there's new reporting about what's going to happen, what's not going to happen with the whole situation to the return. But now we've kind of got some more concrete, not data, but just information about what's going to happen with the league. So Colin and I are going to kind of go through that. We have some news about LaMarcus Aldridge being out for the rest of the season, and then just going kind of going through just the latest with the league. All right, so let's go and begin. Last week, the Board of Governors had approved by a 29-1 vote a resolution to resume the season in late July, all the way through pretty much October if the finals go all the way to Game 7 at that date. Then the following day, the NBAPA, the Players Association, also approved that plan. And so the way you've probably seen this at SpursCast listeners, if you've been online, and we've also written about it on Project Spurs, I'll just kind of give you a brief rundown of what's going to happen here. So there will be 22 teams going to Orlando at the Disney World Resort, where they have a close off what they're calling a bubble campus environment. They're going to be playing, each team will be playing 8 seeding games. And then, of course, you know, they'll look at the standings, and they will select your 16 playoff teams. Again, the same normal format. So it's 8 teams in the West, 8 teams in the East, 7-game series. And there could be a chance at a play-in tournament for the 8th seed in each conference if the 9th seed team is within 4 games. So regarding the Spurs, they will be there in late July. It's expected to kick off July. It was originally July 31st, but now ESPN's reporting that it's going to be July 30th. Some other details, the lottery, the way it's going to work is for the Spurs, unless they can get that 8th seed, they're most likely going to have the 11th pick still. That's not going to move. So even if the Spurs do horrible, they go 0-8, and they don't make the playoffs, they're probably just going to be 11th no matter what. If they do really well and they actually beat out Memphis for that playoff spot, well, then things would change and their lottery odds would get worse because they'd be a playoff team. The draft lottery is expected to be held on August 25th. The NBA draft is supposed to be held October 15th. Next season, tentatively, could start December 1st. That's still on waiting. And then training camp could start by November 10th. Free agency is expected to start here October 18th. And just today, Colin and I recorded this on a Thursday. ESPN, Woj, and Bobby Marks are reporting that the NBA is going to allow 17 players per roster, and that can include the 2 two-way players if teams have them. And the Spurs do have two players in Drew Eubanks and Quindary Weatherspoon. What else did I want to get here? We kind of tackled everything. Yeah, so Colin, just kind of out of all that information, what just kind of give me your thoughts on this proposal by the league.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I thought was interesting was I was listening to, I think, Nate Duncan on his podcast, and one of the points that he brought up, because I think another thing that people are saying is like, is this really, you know, things are maybe kind of starting to look like they're slowing down with Corona, and then all of a sudden they look like they're not slowing down with Corona. Like, is this really the best use of resources? And one of the interesting things that he brought up that someone else brought up, and I can't remember who originally he heard it from, was like, you know, this campus environment is actually probably going to be like safer for the players and like just hanging out in whatever cities they're in normally, because it seems like people are starting to act like things are going back to normal, even though it's probably not done yet. Like, what we're going through is probably maybe even going to spike again in the fall. Is some reporting we've seen. And so I think that, you know, people thought, oh, people are risking their lives for no reason. But I think that it sounds like with all the precautions they're taking, and I'm sure they have a lot more that we haven't heard about, I think the campus situation is actually going to be healthier than we thought. Now, the players who are a little bit, we've heard reporting of like, oh, certain players aren't comfortable with this environment for X, Y, and Z reasons. And I think all of those reasons are valid. I think that'll be interesting to see if a big name player feels that way. Mm-hmm. Like if one of the high level stars is saying, you know, I don't really feel comfortable going to this campus site for X, Y, or Z reason. And the NBA is not going to say, well, that's not a good enough reason. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if that does happen. I'm not foreseeing that, but I think, you know, it's one of those things where as long as the NBA and the NBPA haven't come to an agreement, the players realize that maybe they have a little bit extra leverage here to say they don't feel comfortable with whatever policy and they can try to maybe get things adjusted. I think the whole like forcing them to stay in the campus is something that not everyone is super on board with. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how that goes. But I think overall, it was definitely an interesting proposal. I really liked the World Cup idea, style idea, and I wish they did that instead. And I know this is something that Zach Lowe said a lot, so I'm kind of just parroting him, but I agree in terms of I don't know why the Suns are there, or like
the Wizards.
Yeah. So, and it just feels like, you know, two less teams, that can be anywhere to up to 100 less people. You know, the Jazz had 50 people in their traveling party when Donovan Mitchell and Gobert tested positive. So it's like two less teams is actually really significant in the number of people that it can prevent. But overall, I think it's a good idea, and I'm excited for basketball to come back.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to touch on that you just mentioned there was that there is reporting today also by ESPN that you know, there's going to be players who don't want to go, and like you mentioned, the NBA is not going to penalize them if they don't want to go. They may lose some of their pay, yes, but you know, they're going to be allowed. If a player does not want to go to this environment, they do not have to. They're not requiring them or forcing them. And there's actually been some reporting, like I mentioned, from ESPN that you know, some veteran players mostly, you know, if they feel like they're far away from becoming, you know, a playoff team or a championship contender, they're just probably not going to do it. I saw some just before you and I logged in, I was just on Twitter right now, and there was some rumors that Carmelo Anthony, you know, a veteran player who's up in his late 30s or early 30s, and you know, he's already saying, like, you know, he's not 100% sure if he's going to go. And you got to look at his situation. He's on a team, the Blazers, that are you know, right now, it'd be really I mean, there's a road for them to get to the playoffs, but you know, if they even get there, they'd probably get knocked out in round one is the most likely cause, you know, effect. So, you know, do players, and when you talk about the Spurs, maybe older players like Rudy Gay, like DeMar DeRozan, do they really want to, you know, go through this? And a big issue for the players is two things. It's one, the fact that they have to leave their families behind for several weeks, and you know, the only way they get to bring their family in is if they make it to the second round of the playoffs, and even then their family has to go through all this extensive testing as well while they're with them. So that's one part of it. And then two is, like you mentioned, you know, they're just stuck in that bubble environment on the Disney World campus in a certain part of it, and if they do try to leave the campus, they have to go into automatic quarantine when they get back. So, you know, there's just, you know, basically they're stuck there, they can't leave. And so, you know, for a lot of players, you know, do they really want to go through that, especially if there's not really a chance that their team's even going to make the playoffs? You know, they have to look at that. So we'll see kind of which players, because, I mean, Woj did report yesterday on Wednesday that there was a faction of NBA players who are thinking about staying behind or not, you know, not going. So it could end up being just the teams, like we mentioned, the 22 teams, and maybe a lot of their younger players end up going, especially for those that may not make the playoffs. So, yeah. So we'll obviously wait and see what happens there with the players. One other point we want to talk about real quick is, you know, what are the COVID-19 risks that the NBA is looking at here? So there's been different reporting at different places, like The Athletic, like ESPN, et cetera. So one thing I've seen lately is that they're going to pretty much test everyone that's there nightly when the games do start, and then they'll get their results the next morning. So even if, like, you know, you're negative one day, and then all of a sudden, you know, the next morning you get your results that you're out. And the way they're looking at it is you're probably going to have to, if you do test positive, you're going to have to sit out for 7 days quarantined by yourself at minimum. And then, of course, you have to test negative twice to get back into the team with your team. So that's kind of a difference, because we originally saw that it would be 2 weeks you have to sit out if you test positive, but now they're just saying 7 days. What else here? Woj and Zach Lowe reported recently that the personal medical histories are being asked of all personnel going to this for each team, and there's going to be a panel of medical experts who are going to kind of weigh in on what are the risks for those you know, people with different you know, health conditions that are going to be going to this environment. And three coaches that a lot of people, you know, a lot of the league has questions about, and reporters and everyone, even the fan bases, is Coach Pop, who's the oldest coach going at 71, Coach Mike D'Antoni, the Rockets, at age 69, and then Coach Gentry, Alvin Gentry of the Pelicans, he's 65. They're waiting to see what happens with them, because there's a lot of issues here, because one, it's almost like a discrimination medically to hold them back from participating, and then two, you know, are you going to force them to wear masks or not? And so there's been a lot of issues with the coaching association going back at the league. You know, you can't withhold these coaches just because they hit the age of people that are most, you know, vulnerable to coronavirus. But then, you know, it is like I mentioned, a discrimination issue and medically that they're looking at. And so we have seen, you know, quotes from D'Antoni and Coach Gentry that they are, you know, they pretty much want to risk it. They want to be with their players. They want to be as close as possible, you know, working with them as safe as possible. We haven't seen that from Pop yet. You know, whether on the record if he wants to go or not, because of, you know, the factors. And you know, he was on a recent podcast with Steve Kerr and coach Steve Carroll from the Seahawks, I believe it is, in the NFL. Anyway, he was doing a podcast with them, and you know, he mentioned his granddaughter, how he's been spending time with her. And so, you know, does Pop at 70 want to risk, you know, himself being exposed to this virus when he's still, you know, he's still, you know, once he eventually retires, you know, he's still got his family out there and his own health to look forward to with his own family. So there is a question there, and that was a question you kind of proposed, Colin, was, you know, what would happen if Pop chooses not to go? You know, who do you think would take over coaching? Would it be a trio again of Becky Hammon, Tim Duncan, and Will Hardy? Or do you think, like, one of them would take over as the main coach? What do you think, Colin?
Yeah, so, and I think that kind of has several aspects to it. You know, I think Pop knows that, like, once he retires, he's retired, and I think that's a difficult thing to make, decision to make. I think that's what we saw with both Duncan and Ginobili, who played a couple extra seasons than we thought they would, because I think when, like, it comes down to the time to say, I'm done playing it or I'm done coaching, it can be, like, a hard decision to make, because they don't seem like the type of people who would say, I'm done, and then, like, come back a year or two later. Yeah. So I think that could be a difficult decision, because I think if he sits out the rest of this season, that could be, you know, we could have seen when the Spurs played the Mavs in the middle of March, that was the last time that Pop coached, if he does not come back for this. But I do also think that you mentioned his age, and we don't really know exactly what direction the coronavirus is going to take until we get some sort of vaccine. And you talked about him spending time with his granddaughter. You know, I think that he could continue working in the president of basketball operations role from San Antonio and continue to spend a lot of time in San Antonio and still be involved with the team without having to travel all over the country. And I'm interested to see if he takes a step back from coaching, if he's going to, like, completely retire from the team, or if he's going to kind of remain involved in that capacity, because I can see him maybe still wanting to be involved with basketball, but just in a way that keeps him from having to travel everywhere. But I do think that if he decides not to go, I do think that it'll probably be one of those things where they kind of name all three as the acting head coach like they did. I don't know if the NBA would let them do that, but I think they might do it where maybe kind of like what they've done in the past, where Tim Duncan is the nominal head coach, but each one of them is kind of like the acting head coach in that game, in a sense. And I do think that that would be something very Spursy. I don't really think that they have a gigantic, and I know this is another one of the talking points we have, a gigantic chance to make the playoffs. So it almost seems like it's better to use these 8 games to let them have an environment where they're able to act as the head coach for an extended period of time if the Spurs want to evaluate one of them as the next head coach. That almost seems like the most valuable way to spend these 8 games anyway. I think it would probably be the same thing where they say, Tim Duncan is our head coach, quote unquote, but each game it's like, well, this is Will Hardy's game where he prepared the game plan and he's going to be talking in timeouts, and now it's Becky Hammon's game. I think that that's something likely to see if Pop does decide not to go.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, I think they would also change different roles in doing the media, you know, post-game press conferences and stuff like that with you know, it's going to probably be all online media at this point, what it looks like. But yeah, for sure. And, you know, I just like you, I think that, you know, you'll see them each having a different role and lead while they're over there in the event that Pop doesn't go. And you mentioned something, you know, really critical, was the fact that, like, if he chooses not to go, you know, because of the risk factors, you know, this is probably still going to be here in December when the season restarts next season, and whether it's another bubble environment or wherever they're going to play their games next year, next season, should I say, you know, he's going to have this same choice of whether or not. So this, you know, this could lead to, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, maybe possibly an early retirement if he doesn't end up going to this environment, because, and then he also has to worry about the Olympics too, because he's supposed to coach the Olympics. They got pushed back to 2021, and we'll see if that even happens still. Because, I mean, really, nothing, like we mentioned over and over again, nothing goes back to normal in life until there's a vaccine, and you know, who knows when that could be. You know, they're hoping that it could be by the end of this year, but you just never know when that vaccine's coming. I think one thing I wanted to say is this week we the media held a press conference online with Spurs GM Brian Wright, and when he was asked about this situation with Pop because of his age and the risk of coronavirus, he just said, all of this is to be determined. That was his quote, just all of this is to be TBD. So, like, they don't really know yet. The league's obviously still looking, like I mentioned, they're trying to get medical records of everyone that's going to put to see who's really, really at the most risk if they do catch it. So we'll obviously wait and see what happens, and you know, whether or not Pop goes to coach the team in late July. All right, let's move on to the second topic, Colin, and that's LaMarcus Aldridge. He is out for the rest of the season. This week, earlier this week, the Spurs announced that he had a right shoulder procedure actually back on April 24th. So they've kind of known for a while that he was going to be out, whether or not the season restarted or not. But it's been that right shoulder injury that's kind of been bothering him most of the season, and why you've seen, you know, seen him struggle and play this year. Brian Wright, like I mentioned, was on a conference call with us, the media, this week, and he did mention that, you know, once the league shut down in March, up until that April 24th deadline, Aldridge was trying everything he could do to try to kind of just rehab on his own and get healthy, that shoulder, and it just never happened. So obviously on April 24th, the team and him decided it was best to go along with that procedure to get that fixed, and so he should be ready for next season, you know, when it starts in December. So because of that, the Spurs, they're in an interesting spot because now they basically have two open roster spots. They have one because, you know, they just had an open roster spot when they had cut Damari Carroll or waived him earlier this year when they bought him out. So that was already there. But then because Aldridge is out, they can basically sign a replacement player because, you know, it's a season-ending injury. Now, one thing that Bobby Marks just recently put out, I had just barely seen this today, was that if you replace, you know, your injured players with the two-way players, then they have to take up a roster spot. So really, the Spurs could sign two players but then not bring both Drew Eubanks and Quindary Weatherspoon, or they can bring one of those two-way players and then also sign somebody. So that's kind of where they stand right now. You know, as far as bigs, there's not a lot of bigs out there that I can see making a difference. There's Jordan Bell, who was recently released by Memphis. He's 6'9". He mainly played the five this year with Memphis and Minnesota in his time there. Obviously, DeMarcus Cousins is the name that comes to mind. He hasn't played since in over a year now. It's been since April 9th. That was his last NBA game. You know, there's that question, do the Spurs even have interest in him? I went back and did some research, and I did see that last summer, DeMar DeRozan was trying to get him on the Spurs, trying to pitch to him. But again, we don't know if the team would like him on the team. There's reports that the Lakers wanted to re-sign him, and also Miami Heat has interest. And then also, we don't even know if he's healthy. You know, the projection was that he would have been ready by like April to June in a normal NBA season. He was supposed to come back in the playoffs, basically. But we don't know where exactly he's at physically. So what do you think they should do here with this open roster spot, or these possibly two open roster spots? What do you think, Colin?
Well, it's kind of tough because you think if there's any... And I think this might be kind of jumping the gun on some of the topics here, but if there are any difference makers that are able to be signed, and honestly, I don't have a super good, I've kind of been checked out a little bit, and now basketball's starting back up all of a sudden, so I don't have like a great list of like these are the 50 best players available right now or anything, but I just have a hard time imagining that like the Spurs is a destination for any player that's actually a difference maker right now. I know that there are some free agents that could help certain teams. But I just think that the Spurs obviously have a chance to make the 9th seed. But I don't know if they have a chance to beat the 8th seed two games in a row. And if they do, I don't think that their chances of making it out of the first round are all that great. So I don't know what would appeal a player who might actually be able to be a rotation player on a team that makes a playoff run. Like what the appeal for them going to the Spurs is. I do maybe see something for a player like Jordan Bell, who is kind of now... this past year kind of jumped around the league a little bit. And that term that's thrown around, the second draft or whatnot, except this would be like the fourth draft, I guess, where the Spurs bring in a relatively young player and see like how he fits in their environment and stuff for maybe something more long-term. I think that's probably the best use of the contract, but I don't think that ends up being a difference maker on the court for the 8 games they play. So I think for me, it's mostly like they can use it as a free agent evaluation contract or two, I guess. Really, they might be able to use it to see kind of what they have in Drew Eubanks and Quindary Weatherspoon, but I think Drew is especially important since this is his second year on a two-way, which means that he won't be able to be on a two-way next year, which means they have some decisions to make about kind of his future with the Spurs going forward. So I think more than anyone outside the Spurs, if they're trying to evaluate someone, I think that, interestingly enough, Drew is an important person to evaluate for them. And so I think if there are those young players out there that kind of no one really knows exactly how their career is going to go at this point, if they're willing to come to the Spurs, that might be good in terms of them trying to evaluate them for a long-term fit. But I think they kind of have one of those players. I mean, Drew Eubanks might not have the upside of some of those guys typically, but he might have a future with this team, and they're going to actually have to make a decision on him this offseason. So I think the guys they have, actually, they have some questions on, but anyone they do sign, I think the best use of it is like a young player that they might want to see if they fit in their system going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. And again, I honestly just think that they're gonna bring Eubanks and Weatherspoon into Orlando with them, and then maybe sign an extra player in case like we see like DeMar DeRozan doesn't want to go to the Orlando League, or Rudy Gay, or just someone chooses not to go. Maybe that's another case where they sign someone. So we'll kind of see what happens there. Let's talk about Aldridge real quick, because depending on, we don't know exactly how the Spurs are going to, what kind of direction they're going into this offseason. We've basically seen that, barring them making the playoffs in the Orlando League, they're probably not a playoff team anymore with the roster that they have right now, is what it showed like up till March. And so they do have to make that decision. He's going to be 35 next season when they start. He has a guaranteed $24 million, but then after that, he will be a free agent, unrestricted, the following season. He averaged about 19 points this year, 7 rebounds, 2 assists. So you do see some decline in his play. You could also attribute some of that to the injury that we've mentioned before. But you propose a good question. Was March, probably maybe Aldridge's last game as a Spur if the team decides to go in a different direction next year? Because you got to keep in mind, they have some young players that they want to try to evaluate. They have Lucas Samanich, who probably needs some minutes next year. They may try to re-sign Jakob Poeltl and keep him as a part of their future this offseason. Trey Lyles has done really well for them this year, he has a non-guaranteed option for next year, so they could guarantee that and keep him next year. And then also they have that 11th pick coming in, it looks like, right now, and so they could get a pretty good young player to go in. So what do you think that what's going to happen with Aldridge right now?
Yeah, this offseason is actually really interesting for the Spurs, because there's a lot of different directions they could go, and I think that a lot of it will depend on conversations that they have with both Aldridge and DeRozan, where they maybe say, hey, we need to get some of these younger guys some minutes. If you feel comfortable staying here another year and kind of being that mentor role, obviously they would play both of those players. They're still good enough to get a good number of minutes on this team for sure. But I think to say like, hey, we will cut back your minutes a little bit to give some of these younger guys a run, like, would you want to be here if that's the case, or would you want to go somewhere where you can kind of spend the rest of your career maybe being more of the high-minute guy like you're used to? And I think if they say, we're not really interested in kind of a minute reduction, we'd rather be on a team where we can kind of carry more of the load like we're used to, I bet the Spurs try to trade them at that point. It just seems like something that they'd have an open conversation with. I think that if Aldridge was like, I'm cool with being here and being a mentor to these young players, they would obviously keep him around in that situation, maybe. Because I don't think they're really trading him for a ton of value at this point. Like you said, 35 coming off of a shoulder surgery. But I think that if they will have the conversation about, hey, we're probably going to go in this direction as a franchise this season a little bit, and then the season after especially. And if that's not something you're super excited about, then we can get you on another team so you can at least spend the last couple of years of your career, late prime, post prime career, in a situation that you're more enjoyable with. And I think that question maybe is more, I think Aldridge might actually say yes, he would enjoy being a mentor to these young players. I think that DeRozan probably accurately feels like he still has more in the tank in terms of kind of where he is in his career. And if he was kind of asked to do the same thing, I think that he might say, I will opt in, but I would prefer kind of going to a place where I can be the guy. And that, both of them, I don't really know exactly how much value the Spurs are getting back in a trade. So it's really interesting. There's like a million different directions that this can go. I know the Spurs will obviously, they try to make the playoffs again. The record will probably be broken this year. And then the getting into the playoffs in the West next year is going to be incredibly tough. Yeah. And I just, running this same team back to try to make it again next season just doesn't seem like a wonderful idea. So I imagine that there's going to be a change. It's just kind of hard to pin down what it will be.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then our last, topic on this subject with Aldridge out is we kind of tackled it already, both of us. You know, we basically both feel like right now there's not a free agent out that they're going to sign that's really going to make a huge drastic difference. Who's going to beat out, you know, Jakob Poeltl or Trey Lyles or Rudy Gay for their minutes? So I think that we're going to see, you know, this continuation of what they were doing right before the season ended, which is playing a lot more small ball. Now, I know that DeJounte Murray and Jakob Poeltl were hurt right before the end of the – right before they stopped play. Now, on that call with Brian Wright, he didn't specifically say they're healthy right now, but he did mention basically all the players are going except for Aldridge. So we're assuming Murray's going to be ready and also Jakob Poeltl. So in that case, you know, I think we're going to see more small ball like how we were seeing right before. So, you know, you'd have DeJounte Murray and Patty Mills at the one. Bryn Forbes is probably starting at the two still. Then Derek White coming in to replace him, and Lonnie Walker. DeRozan at the three. Keldon Johnson was getting a lot more minutes there at the end at the three. Trey Lyles probably starting. Bellinelli maybe playing some backup four. And then Jakob Poeltl. And even like we saw Rudy Gay playing a little bit of five right before the season ended. That was interesting to watch on some games when Aldridge was out. So he 6% of his minutes at the five. And then, of course, you know, Pop trusted Drew Eubanks a little bit more as well. So I think that we're going to see. Do you agree that Pop's probably just going to roll with this like more so small ball, like where we saw DeRozan playing some four, Bellinelli playing some four, Rudy Gay at the five?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, they have some players that they probably want to do a little bit more evaluation on internally. Like I said, the only exception is someone that's kind of young that maybe could have a chance in the right environment, but I don't think that's going to change much for these eight games. So I agree with you that they were probably going to just kind of see more of where we left off with the Spurs than kind of any new player coming in and making a big difference.
For sure. And then the last topic we want to go through is just real quick, because of we basically, even though we don't know who the Spurs will play in these eight seeding games, we don't know how the schedule is going to be built out yet. The league hasn't provided us with that. We can see mathematically, you know, their path to get into the playoffs or how they're basically not going to get there. And so I put a piece up on Project Spurs earlier this week called Scenarios for Spurs to Get Eighth or Ninth Place in Seeding Games. And so what I did was I basically broke down all the ways they can get the eighth seed, because the league is going by winning percentage, since not all teams will have played the same amount of total games when this is all over. And then also, so I did it for the eighth seed and also the ninth seed. So, Colin, in order to get the eighth seed, let's focus on that first. So basically to keep this playoff streak alive, or at least to get the eighth seed before the play-in tournament, they'd have to do at worst 5-3 and at best 8-0. I mean, that's really hard without Aldridge to go 5-3. And even if you do that, you're banking on the Grizzlies going 0-8. You're banking on the Blazers, Pelicans, and Kings to go 4-4, and the Suns to go 6-2. So do you even think that just getting the eighth seed right now is even, you know, do you think it's even likely with this team?
Oh, not at all. I don't think there's a chance. I mean, it's, yeah. I don't think so. And I'm sure we're going to discuss that more with the ninth seed, but definitely not the eighth seed.
Same here. I just don't think. And even if they were to get the 8th seed, let's say they did that, well, guess what? If one of the 9th seed teams is within four games of them in the record, well, then they have to be forced into a play-in tournament. And in that case, the 8th seed only has to win one game to move on to the real playoffs, whereas a 9th seed has to win two games. All right, so now let's go look at the 9th seed. Now, there's definitely way more options for them to get into the 9th seed that would force the 8th seed into a play-in tournament. And the way that goes is at minimum, the Spurs would have to go 1-7. At best, they could go 8-0, like I mentioned. Now, the problem there is, like, let's just say they go 1-7. Well, guess what? The Grizzlies can do anything they want. You'd have to have the Blazers, Pelicans, Kings all go 0-8, and you'd have to have the Suns go 2-6 or worse. So, I mean, if I had to paint a number to get them into that 9th seed, I would say 5-3 would probably be their best option. That's like the safest, but even that's hard to do, like we mentioned earlier. To go 5-3 means the Grizzlies would go 1-7 or better, and then everybody else would go 4-4 or worse. What do you think about the 9th seed?
Yeah, so I think with the schedule that they had when they ended the season, they were pretty close to getting into that 9th seed and getting within four games. We don't know exactly how they're going to do the schedule, like you said, but we do know the 22 teams that are going to be there. And how many of those teams would the Spurs be favored in a game against? You know, Portland's probably going to be healthy. Grizzlies are going to be healthy again, probably. So that, I think, gives us, I mean, maybe like the Suns, the Nets, maybe like Orlando and Washington, maybe those four teams.
Yeah, and I doubt they're going to play all those teams.
Yeah, exactly. They have eight games. They're probably not going to play all four of those teams. And if they do and win those four games, like, I don't think we can realistically imagine them to win the other four games that they're playing against competition that's going to be really high level, especially with Aldridge out. So, and then if they do make the play-in game, I don't know if they could beat the Grizzlies or the Pelicans or the Portland Trailblazers, who would be healthy at that point, two times in a row to make it in. So, yeah, I think it's a really big long shot unless, you know, I think maybe if all of the players come back and they're just like in pristine shape after it, you know, maybe Murray comes back and he's like all the way back from his injury. It looked like this season he was still just a little bit hampered with the rehab. Yeah, I just find it hard to believe that they even go 5-3, because I think that just the 22 teams that are there, they're going to have a really difficult schedule, and it'll be, I mean, they would have to win maybe 3 or 4 or 5 upsets just to get to the 5-3 mark. So yeah, I you know, there's obviously a chance, but I definitely wouldn't count on it, especially with Aldridge being out. I think Aldridge being out kind of took away any hope that there was, in my opinion.
Yes, same here. I just don't, you know, this road looks really tough. Like you mentioned, you know, I just don't see, you know, even if like they go 5-2, like I mentioned, you know, they have to have other teams do just as, you know, do worse, basically. And that's hard when you have no control over how those other teams are going to play. So, you know, we'll see. Like Colin, I mentioned, I think it's a long shot. I don't think that they're going to, you know, continue this playoff streak that's gone on for over 20 years or whatever the number of years are for it. So, you know, just to remind Spurs fans, you know, in the event that they don't make the playoffs, they're going to get to keep that 11th pick as far as the lottery order goes now. So again, even if let's say they play horrible, 0-8, you know, basically to people would think, you know, somebody asked me on Twitter, you know, does that improve their draft odds? Not really. They're still going to be 11th, because what the league is doing is they're freezing those teams that aren't going to make the playoffs. They're basically freezing your lottery order for now until the real lottery gets here from where it was on March 11th when the league stopped. So that's basically why I keep saying the Spurs are most likely just going to be the 11th spot in the lottery until they do the real lottery in August when that comes up. So that's basically what's going on, you know, with the Spurs right now and the NBA's return. Like Colin and I mentioned, you have to basically watch daily what's going on, because every day there's new different reporting. We may start seeing some actual players start saying that they're not going to end up going to this environment, and then we'll also obviously have to wait and see what kind of changes the league is going to make. So before we close out this episode, just make sure you follow Colin on Twitter. He's at Colin Reed PS, again at Colin Reed PS. And then just to plug some of our information and things, one thing that I really want to encourage Spurs fans, Spurscast listeners to do is really go to the Spurs website or their apps, you know, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, and look up this series that they're doing called the Spurs Voices videos. They are really, really powerful. You know, we know what's going on right now in our country. With the diversity issues and everything, and the Spurs have done a great job with the series. I highly encourage you to watch these videos where it's not only their players, it's some of their employees, their staffers, and where they basically talk about, you know, if being a Black American, what it's been like for them growing up, and then even, you know, even if they're not Black, you know, their family members, what it's been like, or friends and stuff. And so it's just, they're really, really powerful videos. I really encourage you all to go watch those. They're called the Spurs Voices videos from the Spurs organization. The G League, let me see here. Oh, yeah, Jonas Clark, a writer, he has his latest piece out called The G League is Quietly Having a Pretty Good 2020. So if you want to check out that piece by Jonas Clark, it's up there on projectspurs.com. Benjamin Bornstein continues to, you know, provide draft prospect watches to keep an eye on. Now that we know for sure the draft is coming, I believe it was in October earlier today. And then also I've added some new things. I know analyzingtheleague.com has been pretty quiet, but I've actually been, you know, more motivated to work there and create some things. So one thing I've created, this offseason is called the Free Agent Shot Location Database. It's over on analyzingtheleague.com, and it's pretty interesting. What it does is it shows you all the current free agents. Well, for now, it's the ones that are not going to Orlando, and I'm going to be expanding it as we get more info on the teams that are not going. And what I've done is I've basically just taken their shooting stats only, and I've kind of shown you, you know, what kind of player they are. So it's a really good way to see a player that your team has interest in or that they sign, and you can quickly see, you know, what kind of offensive output do they provide when it comes to shooting. So it's really interesting that I put that tool up on analyzingtheleague.com. And also this summer I'm going full salary cap sheets for each team. So right now I have live on analyzingtheleague.com the salary sheets for all 8 teams that are not going to Orlando. And once teams start getting knocked out of the playoff picture or not, we see that they're not going to end up making it, I'll start providing those teams as well. So again, those are some things that are going on over on analyzingtheleague.com. So thank you to Colin Reed again for joining me as my guest. I'm Paul Garcia, and for Colin Reed, have a great day and stay safe out there. Bye.